it will be important for the department not to put deadlines or milestones that are not informed by the realistic situation on the ground. If the department was familiar with the local government structure and how it functions, it would have never put that as a deadline, because the department would have known that this matter will first go to the LED committee, and from the LED committee, it would go to the EXCO of a municipality. And from the EXCO of a municipality, it then gets escalated to the full council, and it is the full council that takes the decision. So if a department was working with the local government structure and understanding the processes, and the particularly the IDP process, how many times does the council meet with IDP forum, how council committees are structured, and which committee you are relating to, you would have not put that as a milestone. So the point that I'm making is that a milestone has to be realistic. You don't have to look at yourself. You have to look at the other structures that you are interacting with. And in this case, the local government sphere was more important for you to understand before you even put the deadline.
The point accepted, Chair, completely. Yeah, completely. Now, to proceed on the steering committee, who constitute the steering committee? The drivers of the steering committee, Chair, it's the LED managers in all the districts. They are the drivers of this steering committee. But they vary from district to district in terms of other stakeholders that are participating there. In other districts, you have a situation where we've got all the other departments. The Department of Rural Development is there, the Department of Agriculture is there, and then the transport is there, and then you've got all those particular departments that are participating in water are participating there. So you've got these varieties that are there in those different particular committees. But the driving seat and those who are leading are the LED officers, who are then having the principal city manager overlooking the whole process that it is going according to plan, because we wrote the letter to the city manager, we then designated those LED.
So add on that.
Yes.
A steering committee is project driven. And in this particular matter, it's agricultural cooperatives. And all the departments that have a role to play in the development of those cooperatives are the ones that would form the steering committee, because the steering committee has to do with what each department will be contributing. Like we had a coordinating committee for 2010 Soccer World Cup. It was only the departments that had a role to play and budget to align for South Africa to achieve the hosting of 2010 Soccer World Cup. And in this case, the steering committees would be based on which departments are key to make this project work. And those departments would then choose who would represent the department in the steering committee. Like in the case of the Department of Small Business, they have identified Jeff to be the project manager. So the criteria will be determined by the project itself, and then the skilled person in that department in terms of understanding agriculture and the things that have to be delivered by that department will sit in the steering committee.
Okay, all right. Now, on the, I think we're going to point number 8 in terms of the question. I think the issue there that was being asked was around funding. Am I right? It's funding, page number 8, which is around funding. The issue of the assessments and the needs. We did embark on assessing all the needs of the cooperatives, and we were working closely, Chair, with CORE on those needs. And then in our engagement with each of those cooperatives, identified very clearly what all those needs are, and they are demarcated into two aspects. From a aspect of working capital, they will need seed, they will need all the requirements to have the seed to be paid for, all of the inputs to go there, which we need to buy for them. And then also there are fixed capital requirements that needed to be provided for them. And then those, some of them, it's boreholes that needs to be given and then to get water, and then others is tractors, others is, and then we've got also the housings that we're going to be building for them, to the storage facilities and all of those. So you are dealing with two aspects, fixed capital investment and the working capital investment. Those are the two needs that those cooperatives have. The other need are very much technical training support. We realize that they need to be hand-holded technically if they are to succeed. How to plow, what levels of manure you put there, and all of those kinds of things. When do you water? What are the degrees of waters that needs to be provided? All that agriculturalist, experts who must then come in and advise them, they need to be provided with that. The other part is transport to take their produce to market. That is also came out very clearly as one of their needs. And then, which then means that is, we are looking at designing shared services here rather than to have track for each of those cooperatives. Our agreement is that we're going to come up with two or three trucks which we purchase for all of the 10 cooperatives, which then services all of them. And those assets then must sit in the secondary cooperatives. It's something that we are engaging with those cooperatives so that there is a share of those assets instead of then having all of them, so that the money that we're going to be providing them can then go a long way and provide them all the required needs. So that is the model and the approach that we're using in that particular. The other need is access to market, which they need to be provided very clearly, access to market. Then you do have others who need access to land. That is the, I think it's these cooperatives that it had a land and then it was pushed out by communities. They need to be provided land, that cooperative. And there is also another cooperative which we moved. It used to sit in Nkumundluv. Now it's moved into Ugu. It's in the Ugu district. And then it got now 30 hectares of land. So those are the kinds of needs that are there. Now, the arrangement that we have with CEDA Chair on the area of sustainability is that we need long-term contracts beyond just the issue of 1 year. We need long-term contract that goes beyond 3 years. That's the agreement. That's where our guys must now do that, because the essence of sustainability is going to be a long-term contract. First, the second aspect of sustainability is going to be on the aspect of training them rigorously over this period of 3 years so that they fully understand to run the system independently. The third aspect that we are seeing that is going to be there, we are going to be now moving them to a bigger platform where they're going to get greenhouses. On greenhouses, that is second phase, which then the income will be quadrupled from where they are going to be sitting, they're going to now be operating at a higher level of scale and scope. And then all of these are going to be operating as a cluster so that they can then be able to supply commodities in big quantum to those who are purchasing at the retail stores that we're going to be engaging with to enter into a contract with them. So that is then the real approach, is that CEDA is going to be there on a long-term basis, not just an issue of a week or any few weeks. It's going to be there over the period of 3 years to make sure that those cooperatives are sustainable. And then we foresee a situation that after 3 years, we're going to be going into the level where we go to second phase with them to make sure that we build greenhouses with them. So that is the approach there. In terms of the deviation, the deviation that we are talking about is in twofold, is in threefold. That's why I explain it. The requirement, initially our assumption was that normally most of these documents, we design them as department, and then we get either the National Treasury to approve them, and then you get the Minister of Finance to then put have a right to sign to these policy documents. On this one, it was entirely approved by the then Minister of Trade and Industry. When we look at the document and we look at who has the signatory powers of approving this instrument on CIS, is the minister, our minister. Then we then said, then it means then in terms of legal requirement, we need to ask our minister to provide us this deviation because she is the principal signatory and approver of the document. All right. So it is in that regard where we then channel the document to ask for deviation from the minister in that particular regard. And then the capital now is that 11 million is strictly on the aspect of clusters. You see, you look at these 12, we're going to be implementing them as a cluster under the secondary cooperatives. So we are then going to be funding them all. Individually, by the way, I presented last time, individually they need 950 to a million, 950, each of those cooperatives, 950 to a million. Those are the figures that they are running around. So we calculated that, we looked at it, we saw it, that it would be around 10 point something million to fund all of that entire cluster. So in that regard then, it means therefore we're going to be using a cluster funding arrangement that we're calling for to fund those 10 cooperatives, those 12 cooperatives. We're going to fund them through that mechanism. Now, but what we then said is that we do have a situation whereby we do find certain cooperatives who had applied for 350, but we find that they would have been better served if they had received either 450 or to a million or half a million. So we then said, then let's increase it to a level of about half a million, you see. And now, even that amount, we do believe that it is not adequate. And I would be the first to admit that it's not adequate. Looking at the inflation and all the aspects, we should be sitting at 1.5 and 1.8 to really put good grant funding to these cooperatives and ensure that they are on a sustainable footing in terms of funding them individually if they are coming with an application which is individual. But we then said that those that are grouped, we have made sure that there is a funding that is entirely sustainable in that particular regard. We are reviewing the CIS instrument, and then we are now going to be putting figures that are much more appropriate in terms of those amounts, because we are now reviewing them so that we can have cluster funding under this instrument with individual funding, which I think is going to be more than 500,000. It will be sitting at 1 point something or to 2 million. And then we then have a technical funding built into the cluster so that we have a component of technical funding. And this year alone, the budget of this year is 70 million for CIS. You can imagine that's the constrained budget we're operating under. It means that it will then be able to impact on the numbers of cooperatives what they were going to fund moving forward using this model. But it's something that we're going to change moving forward. Now, on the area of training, I'll give it to my colleague to answer that one, and then I'll come back.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Member. The training that will be delivered by Coastal College is based in Durban, However, the facilitators from Coastal College are going to go to the premises or to the sites of each cooperative. So that's where the training will take place. So in essence, we're not expecting co-ops to travel to Durban. And the elements, what is the training going to cover? For now, there's four areas that have been identified. One is governance, because governance is seen as very important for a group of people who run an enterprise. The second area is conflict management, and the third area is compliance in relation to all the obligations of a cooperative. What is it that they need to comply with and what year? And the last area is financial management. And I think it will also link up with issues of cash flow projection and understanding how to manage your finances as a cooperative. And then in terms of the duration, it's a four-week a training program. However, there's flexibility, Chair, in that if it's not going to be four consecutive weeks, so if in a particular period the facilitators and the co-op agree that this week I'm not available, they can reschedule it so to spread it, even if it's spread over 2 months, so that in essence the business people are not taken away from operating their businesses. And then in relation to, so this is more your soft training, in relation to technical training, CEDA, Chair, has appointed four agriculturalists. So these are in the employment of CEDA. So these four agriculturalists will then be deployed also to each of the cooperatives to provide the technical assistance that Mr. Ndumo spoke about. Thank you so much.
Chair, the other question that was asked was around the issue of harvest. Most of these cooperatives are doing the commodities which are in agriculture. It's cabbage, spinach. It's in those particular areas. Those are the commodities that are going to be plowing. And we do anticipate that, because we are really wanting to see this thing immediately approved so that we can release the money immediately. We do anticipate that at least around the period, around October or August, we should be able to have them already put things on the ground, and then they are able then to be in the period where they can harvest. In that regard, yes, indeed, we anticipate they will have things that they're going to be harvesting that would have been plowed. With Nwebezaka, I must admit that is there is an engagement with them, with CEDA, but we are just waiting the money to be released, because we need to buy them all sorts of those fixed investment. We need to put things on the ground for them so that they start now functioning in real terms, and then give them the working capital that they need, which they put it very explicitly, so that they can then sustain themselves. Part of that working capital also will involve some of the subsidizing their income, maybe for about 12 months. So that they are able to have incomes during those particular periods. They are built into that arrangement. And then in terms of the training, there will be financial management training, and then indeed this cooperative will learn how to create budget for themselves, how to then do funding, how to price their commodities, how to do it very well, and then be able to develop their own financial systems. That's what that training has to do in that particular regard. And then the other issue is the issue of the harmonization with COA. The essence of COA arrangement really is twofold, Chair. It's the agreement on technical training, because they have to provide training, and the other aspect is on access to market. Those are the two things we're going to be agreeing with them in developing those particular cooperatives. So we were waiting very clearly to say, has the figure been approved to enter into that funding amount? And then once it is approved, then we will enter into an agreement with COA, and then we will also be bringing CEDA on board into that agreement because we want it to be a driver. Because the technical training, we are not going to fund it alone. We are saying that CEDA gets enough money on technical training, and that money, the bulk of it must come from CEDA. So that is our approach, really, on this particular aspect. That's why we're bringing CEDA on board on technical training. And then also, we're also bringing CEDA on the issue of access to market so that they collaborate and work together with COA on that particular regard. So that's what it entails, really, that issue. The issue of the challenges. Yes, indeed, the challenges is speed. We need speed, we need to do it timely, and we need to do it much quicker, so that some of these commodities do not find themselves outside the harvest period. That's the biggest challenge that we're facing, and I think that is we're getting into trouble with that particular aspect, and I think we hope things will be unlocked so that we could be speedily into delivery. The other challenge is the fact that we are dealing with members of cooperatives that will need really lot of attention to be able to come out and be able to be effective. So there has to be patient capital, patience investment that is put in there to enable them to come out to be an effective entities to run their businesses. So it means that government has to be prepared to put a lot of investment into the whole thing in that regard. Not only investment in money, but investment in time and investment in guiding them throughout the process of their growth. That's going to be the challenge that we are going to be facing here. And then the other issue that which I think I've asked, the agreements, 5-year agreement with COA. Well, COA has entered into 5-year agreement with each of those individual cooperatives. That agreement is co-op to COA. That is the agreement that they've entered into. So we are also going to be discussing in that agreement with us, what is that length? When can we come? We are thinking a 3-year agreement on our parts, that 3 years should be in a basis whereby this cooperative should be up and running on their own, on our own, so that for us to be there on a 3-year basis, it will be adequate, but we need to be able to engage on that particular. That is the thinking that we're having at the moment, that it has to be a 3-year arrangement in that regard. So, and then I think if there is any point, yes, in terms of timelines, I think we've discussed that, and then the process, we are really trying to make sure that this thing works. We want to move out of pilot immediately and test this pilot to be success so that we can replicate it throughout the economy. In fact, once we get into the replication, it then means that we can mobilize more money from National Treasury and then up the ante even on the CIS so that we can then get more capital to then roll it out throughout the whole economy and the whole country. That's where we want to really come out. We're hoping that this year we will implement this, test it, and see that it works. And then on 2018, 2019, we can then begin to go to other provinces. Chair, if there is anything that I've omitted, I will be guided. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I must say that I am impressed with the progress that is being made. There is still a lot to learn because this is a pilot project. And a pilot project means that you implement, you reflect on what you have implemented, you identify the gaps and you modify to actually perfect the situation. I just want to make a few observations that are very impressive for me. The first one is on the issue of technical skills. I'm very much impressed by the fact that CEDA is coming on board and appointing 4 agricultural which are going to be deployed in these cooperatives. I think that is a step in the right direction, because from the very onset, COA had said that they would want to impart the skill on their farming model, because they cannot be all over. And if SIDA had not come up with that intervention, it would have then meant that the farming model of COA was not going to be learned. And as a result, there was not going to be the capacity, internal capacity building within government structures. So it is a very important step in the right direction. What I would then suggest happens is that the project manager facilitates a meeting in harmonizing the situation, which would then involve COA and SIDA and the appointed agriculturalists, so that they are on the same page in terms of the farming model that is being used. And that is capacity building. And it also speaks to the NDP in terms of the private sector partnering with government and partnering with communities. That arrangement is a practical implementation of that objective of the NDP, because COA is a private company. SIDA is a state-owned entity, so it's government, and cooperatives are communities. So it's a perfect implementation of that. I did not get the fourth training, if you can repeat the soft skills training that is offered by Coastal College.
Thank you, Chair. I think the fourth one is financial management. So maybe let me list all of them. Governance, number one. Number two, conflict management. Number three, compliance. And number four, financial management. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. I think that that is important for members of cooperatives to understand to have a basic knowledge on that. But we should be mindful of the fact that managers of cooperatives are not necessarily members of co-ops. And financial managers of cooperatives are also not members of co-ops. Which then means that when these members have been given an idea of what is required of them, like on the governance, I think that the focus would be on the board of directors of the cooperative. On a financial management, the target group there would be the people in the cooperative that are serving on the finance committee of the cooperative. And then on compliance, it would be the committee in a cooperative that deals with issues of marketing and all that. And the conflict management would be the committee that deals with human relations related issues within the cooperative, which is what is missing in the structures of cooperatives that we have visited. No one talks about the committees that get established in a cooperative. Everybody talks about the chairperson, the secretary, the treasurer, whereas cooperatives have got different committees, and there is continuous education on cooperatives, and there is also a rotational of representation in these committees, so that all members can then get skills to manage a cooperative in a democratic manner. So I think that it is important. But in the absence of a cooperative academy, one would then be found wanting as to the people that are providing those skills. How do they get accredited? Because Coastal College also outsources and if the Coastal College outsources to people that have not been accredited by the Cooperative Academy, then which structure then in South Africa is accrediting people that are providing training on cooperatives without that? That then means that the department has to engage with the Department of Higher Education and conclude the process of establishing the Cooperative Academy so that the issue of accreditation and also the issue of developing training manuals would sit with the Cooperative Academy instead of using manuals that are designed by fly-by-night service providers. Then I would also appreciate a situation where the department starts the process of engaging with the University of Zululand. Because they are graduates. The University of Zululand has got a 2-year training course which produces cooperative managers. I'm not sure whether they have upscaled it to produce cooperative financial managers. And that would be an add-on to absorb the graduates that are coming from the University of Zululand and then have them deployed in these cooperatives as part of their learnership program. It's a program within government. There will be no extra funding that is required for that. It's just to negotiate that to get from the University of Zululand who are the graduates that are coming from those areas that can then be absorbed and be plugged into these cooperatives as cooperative managers and cooperative financial managers. And it is it's 3 beds with 1 stone. One, you are giving the graduates a learning an experience, because you are utilizing learnership. You are not paying them, they are paid through the learnership. The service that the cooperatives would have paid money for is not paid for by the department and also by the cooperative. So it's 3 beds with 1 stone. And you are providing those graduates with employment. On the issue of marketing,
before you move on the same issue of academic institution, my proposal here would be, because we are the Committee of Parliament that can summon anyone, we call this Coastal College to make presentation on us, just to get the sense what the department are doing, what you are saying, the sense of what they are offering, because I think the committee are fortunate to have you, who's got vast knowledge in this thing of training of cooperatives. Whatever we'll get from them will assist us to have more reasons to push for the cooperatives development agency, academy, as well as have grounds to, in the meantime, use the University of Zululand route while we are doing these other processes. I remember, Chair, when we were doing the merger of institutions, there was one who was there in that committee with Professor Kata Asmad when I was the spirit leader. We said University of Zululand won't be merged, but it will offer some practical agricultural based skills, including what you are talking about. So I'm saying you are much relevant and correct. The user is offering that kind. And I remember during our oversight in Devon, the guy from the office of the MEC of Economic Development also said that they are working with the University of Zululand on training young people, graduates in cooperatives. I'm suggesting that we call the Coastal College so that we do not sit here and they feed our people very irrelevant thing while we are saying, no, we are engaging higher education, we are engaging this. Let's also call them because they are now depart. Let's call them and listen to them so that if there is a damage that is happening, we are able to control it as early as possible. Thank you, Chair.
I am also happy with the fact that a Coastal College will be traveling. The agreement is saying that because in the past, the training has been offered in one or two people taken from a cooperative and the rest of the members would not get the information. And that was a problem in my observation. When coming to the issue of the market, access to the market, I think that again, there is enormous opportunity around that. If these cooperatives were to be developed in the manner that you are moving, Jeff, to do the assessment, listen at what the portfolio committee has observed, what are the recommendations, then respond to those. We would come up with a good model in South Africa because already there are other programs that could be linked to this process could be aligned to. One of them is the AgriPax program of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So the AgriPax are going to be the market cause, but it's not this department that is going to be developing the AgriPax. It's the Department of Rural Development, but it is going to absorb the produce that is coming from these cooperatives to do food processing and everything. So it's part of the value chain, but it is sitting with another department, which then means, you see, in signing, there are transversal agreements that would relate to the work of the steering committee, tying down the department to agree in providing whatever is necessary to make these cooperatives take off the ground. But then there are other agreements that relate to how then you develop the value chain, which then would be an agreement that is directed to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, which relates to the absorption of the produce by the AgriPax. That also would go to the Department of Correctional Services, the Department of Defense, the Department of Health, the Department of Social Development, and the National School Nutrition Program, Department of Basic Education. That provides a sustainable market for these cooperatives, which then means that when they want to go full-scale commercial, there is no bank that could reject their application for a loan. because issues of compliance would have been dealt with, and the issue of where is the sustainable market would have been taken care of. But I want to bring it to your attention that when it comes to food perishables and supply, it's not a question of 30% procurement from SMMEs and cooperatives. It's actually 85%. Here is a cabinet resolution taken on of a meeting that's set on the 8th of November ...2007. So if cabinet committed that those 10 goods and services would be procured from SMMEs, what then this department needs to do is to push for that, for the implementation of that. Then the 30% will apply to other goods and services. But to these particular ones that are listed there, it's the 85%, because that decision has not been rescinded. So that when you negotiate with this department, you don't negotiate on the basis of 80%, but you negotiate on the basis of 85%, because it's a cabinet resolution. And it relates to the preferential procurement policy that was being looked at. Then I now come to questions. To improve your work, because when you are dealing with a pilot, you must perfect a pilot in such a way that other countries will come to you to learn how you manage to do it, particularly on issues of poverty. I'm happy with slide number 5 that you are pointing out where these cooperatives are located. However, what is missing there is that you don't indicate which of these areas are presidential poverty nodes, and what are the poverty levels in each of these district municipalities. And that is an area of improvement that we would appreciate if you were to give that, because it gives information to a person who will be following this as a case study that, yes, in actual fact, you were responding to issues of poverty as outlined in the NDP, and you were mindful of the fact that these are presidential poverty nodes. And for them, you would have a different approach for the metro that has got a budget and rural municipalities that do not have a budget. Another missing information that you need to be looking at, if you can then give us an information as to whether there has been any assessment of cooperative members in each cooperative in terms of their dependence on social grants, and whether they come from households that are in the indigent register. For me, that information would also then give us an indication as to, in the model that you are implementing, how do you relate, how does the model relate to that? If a household is in the indigent register and exempted from pay for services because the annual income in a house with a single person working is 39,000 and 78 for two people working in a household, what are the projections there in terms of developing these cooperatives, the members, if they come from that category? When do we want to see them exiting from the social ground register and the indigent and the indigent register? Those will be very, very important also for documentation, so that at some point, when this case study is followed, there will be an indication that out of 12 cooperatives with so many members, these are the members that were coming from households that are in the indigent register. And at a particular point, whether in 2 years or 3 years after this intervention, they were able to exit from the indigent register. And then you also trace that in terms of the revenue base of the municipality that they come from when they begin to pay for services. That is the how you then assess the development status of a cooperative and then the impact of your intervention on challenges that are identified by the MDP, poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And if you don't record those things, there is no way in which you could then, when you are presenting a report, say so many people are employed and so many people have exited from the indigent register, and therefore the revenue base of a municipality has increased with so much percentage. You have to record those things at the start of the project so that you are then able to monitor as you move forward. That is what is called the development status of a cooperative, whether it is making any impact in the community, it is making any impact in the revenue base of the municipality. So you are then not developing a cooperative for the sake of putting money in a cooperative, but you are supporting a cooperative to develop the individual members, the household that they come from, and the municipalities that they are located under. And then you are also linking that to the MDP target. You are then able to say, on a 1 hectare, 10 members are employed. And how many are permanent? How many are only employed during harvesting time? All those issues are very, very important when you are tracking the development status of the cooperative. I'm happy. I am impressed. It's work in progress. Thank you. Honorable Charles, and then Honorable Kappa.
Thank you, Chair. The Chair is, you say you're impressed?
You're impressed.
I'm not impressed, Chair. Let's start with this one now. If you can also help me, maybe I missed this part when I was asking about your staff complement, because I am worried about your ability to work this further in other provinces, because I'm sure you're not employed for the 12 Valley project, you're employed for the department nationally, not unless I'm making a mistake. That's a lot. Now, furthermore, I wanted to ask, another clarity is on the, I don't want us to be trapped in the cooperative and limit ourselves to agricultural cooperatives, not unless that's the implication in this case, like what that means, we're only talking about agricultural cooperatives. But if we talk cooperatives in the broader sense, that there may be other co-ops which may not necessarily be agricultural, which your department is engaged with, so that you don't limit yourself to this one, whereas you are expected to perform somewhere else also. At some stage, I think there was one meeting when we talked about the name of those co-ops because of the nature and that they are agricultural and so on. But we did, I think that's also Reverend Mitch for that time. We talked about the name, the relevant name, which means that according to us, they were no more, they are ceasing to be a pilot. Now, again, there is this part of being a pilot, and it has indicated, we agreed that it is indicated that this works, and therefore as soon as possible it should start being implemented in other areas in the province and in other provinces. That part also to me is very important because it tells us exactly what we want to achieve, and it tells you exactly that the work you are employed for is very big, is huge. The report that Honorable Chair was talking about now, you can see that if you come with the report of that design, which tells us that these projects, each project has been funded like this, it's worked like this, it has these achievements and these potentials, these are the people who are working, this is what they are getting, and therefore by the time you are sure that by the time you leave them, you are moving to somewhere else. To me, that is important. But that one of not limited to agricultural co-ops and not limited to that area or to that province is one thing that we should clarify, because being a national department and you want to achieve, because we cannot pilot until 2019, we'll be gone by then. By 2019, we want to have achieved a lot throughout the provinces. Otherwise, this good work, if it is maintained and continue being improved, some people always say, keep it up, and some of further say, pick it up. So that will assist. So when the chair is impressed, I'm not. I think maybe I'm jealous and excited. So to me, I'm expecting more meaningful things that would happen on the basis of this. And especially if we don't limit ourselves and our resources, we open as much as possible and get all the credibility that you deserve. Thank you.
Honorable Chan, followed by Honorable Lau.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I suppose I have to ask the question of Mr. Ndumo, who's been with this branch of the DTI stroke SVD for 12 years. You know, what's been happening for the last 12 years? If only now is this type of intervention being managed, pursued, operated within your department? Because it goes to the heart of what the co-op should be doing. And why is it not being able to do it in the past? So it's very worrying that with the formation of so many co-ops in this country, of which a very large number are agricultural co-ops, that we now find ourselves in 2017, and a pilot project which was supposed initially to help steer the relationship between COA and its partner co-ops has become much more than that. It's become an experiment, really, in rural development through the vehicle of co-ops as a form of enterprise to create self-sustainability within a community through agriculture. So that then begs the question, and in respect of the answer you gave me to the formation of the steering committee, the composition of the steering committee. Why has the department not formed its own steering committee with agriculture, rural development, social development, and maybe other departments who have a stake in the future of co-ops? Because there are going to be, you'll find that there are thousands of co-ops that have been either started or subsidized or supported or, you know, assisted in some way or other by those departments. And within those departments, you will find there is expertise and experience around those years of developing and supporting and assisting co-ops in whatever way that surely must be tapped, has to be tapped by yourselves. You know, where, if we ask ourselves the question in South Africa, where is the locus of expertise in co-ops? Where does it reside? Well, it doesn't actually reside anywhere. It resides lots of different places. And I was just reading now a report by the DTI, which was dated 2005, which was the year of the Cooperatives Act, if you recall, which was almost saying verbatim what we've been saying in this committee 12 years ago, that whilst there is a commitment by enterprise development agencies to support co-ops, their activities have been badly coordinated, not focusing on real needs, maybe driven by ideology, not really by the facts on the ground. All of these factors combine to the point where we have such an abominable failure rate of co-ops in this country. And it's also very worrying. They're not surprising that you're saying that these co-ops actually need 1.5, 1.8 million rand to get off the ground as opposed to the 350. Remember, the 350 was only supposed to prime the pump. Again, if you look at the Act, you know, the money was there to get these co-ops started, but enable them to then go off to look for other sources of funding and support. But when are they going to actually, you know, remove themselves from the teeth of support? They've got it. They can't just forever and ever be supported. These guys have got to look after themselves. Which, you know, again, is the sustainability factor. And I don't see any evidence yet that you have an answer to that question as to how long it's going to take for these co-ops to be sustainable. Remember, I keep banging on about this. A co-op is a business. It's not just some sort of social enterprise. It has to make itself pay. Are there sufficient markets for these co-ops to develop? I mean, we're going round in circles to a point, but these are the fundamental questions that have got to be answered. And, you know, I'm not sure that I see the answers at this point. And I don't think you do too. I think there's too much water that has to flow under the bridge for these pilots to demonstrate whether we're actually talking about an economic system that that has any chance of success. I'm still also not clear about the money side of things. You're talking about the cluster of 11 million, and then you're talking about half a million, then you're talking about 900,000. Well, what actually is the final figure? What is the figure that the Department of Small Business Development is going to invest in the next 3 years? I'm not just talking about now, because we have a three-year budget, right? This department has a medium-term budget, which is 3 years. What is the department going to invest in this project, Abalimi Co-ops, between now and 2020? And what is the return going to be on that investment? By which I mean, will those co-ops be, if this were a loan, would the co-ops be able to repay that loan? If SIFA was going to lend them this money, would they be paid back? Or would it just go into the bottomless pit of impaired loans that SIFA unfortunately has become known for? You know, at what point do these co-ops become fundable? I mean, chairperson was saying, well, give them a couple of years and they'll be able to have enough business to get them funding. Okay, well, will they? On what terms? You know? At the moment, I see no evidence of any future sustainability from any of the figures that you've shown us, because you've shown us no income figures. It's all about costs, grants. Can't go on like that. So that's my comments, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the staff capacity. Let me start with the staff capacity. Currently, the unit used to have three people, the whole cooperative unit in the department. It was myself, Petunia, and Elizabeth. Those were the people that constituted the cooperative unit. As the DG had just explained, we're now building it into a branch. And then in building it into a branch, we now have now demarcated into three business units. The first business unit is going to deal with, is called Cooperative Development Business Unit. The second one is going to be the design and implementation. And then the third one is competitiveness. There are three now business units that are going to sit under the branch. And now the cooperative development unit consists of two managers. It's Vijay Vala and Mhlanganisi, who are dealing with issues of, we are reviewing the cooperative model. They are finalizing that review, and then they are dealing with that particular aspect. They are also dealing with the aspect of the red tape, which is part of dealing with red tape, which also impact on cooperative and also enterprises. And then now in the design, Z is the manager within the design, and then that's where all projects of this nature, Abalimi, the cooperatives, the 400 has to be driven. The project dealing with the new generation cooperatives will be driven there. The trend analysis, they're going to be conducting that. And then they're also going to be doing a number of other issues. That's the capacity. My director has got himself there, and then he's got also Elizabeth. And then we've got Kopano there in that unit. And then on the third unit, we then have the chief director there. It's Nomvula, who is leading that one. There is a director there, Pulane, and then also there is Ms. Mkasa that is sitting in that particular business unit. Now, this is a rebuild of the branch. That is what we're facing. And then there is also now CIS, which needs a manager to manage it. At the moment, it does not have the manager. It is to be managed by Mr. Kholane Tulare. Now, we need to have a manager for that particular unit. Now, we have recognized, and absolutely recognized, and this is the point that I raised with the DG, that there is a need to capacitate particularly the unit of my colleague. We have now proposed to the DG that we need to have 9 officers which are going to be coupled with 9 project officers that are going to be coupled with 2 project managers who are going to enable us to drive all these projects effectively. And that has received a positive reception. And then it's something that we're going to implement. We already have graduates that are unemployed. We're targeting and we're engaging with the Department of Trade and Industry to bring them on board so that they can then be able to give us that particular length and breadth. And then each of those officers are going to be responsible for each particular province, making sure that we drive these projects effectively. So that is the proposal that we're putting on this particular division. And then simultaneously, on the other hand, we are now putting together the cooperative development agency that must come on board, that is going to give us now financial and non-financial support. We will work closely with the department. That is also in the pipeline. I think Mr. Mhlanganisi is working on that to finalize that portion. So in a sense then, this is the capacity that we're sitting with, Chairperson, currently as I speak to you.
Can we stop there? Earlier on, Honorable Kapa asked the question, how strong is the personnel in the department to deal with this? And we must also remember that the personnel that is charged with the responsibility of dealing with this enormous work is the same personnel that used to work in DPI, and the results are known to all of us. I don't want to rub salt in the wound. It's the same people that produced the 8% failure rate. Now, I want to unpack that question. How strong is the personnel? Because we're not looking at just warm bodies. We are looking at the capacity and the capabilities. So if you can ask me to go and manage a saloon and just do the hair, that saloon would be closed within 2 days. Because I would burn people's hair and the people will sue the saloon owner. Because me, I don't have those skills. But when you look at that, it's a very, you can think of it, it's a very easy thing to do. You can just read the direction from the product. But I don't have those skills. I would not even understand the direction. So I can't run a hair salon. Now, I want to unpack this question that is being asked by Honorable Chapa and assisted by Honorable Chan. What is the training background of the personnel that is being deployed? Are these the people who are trained in development of cooperatives, or these are the people who gained experience because they were working in DTI? That is the first question. The second question is, what institutions has the Department of Small Business Development partnered with or established relationships with to build its own capacity and know-how of cooperative development? Because remember, we are not developing cooperatives. We are developing communities through cooperatives. I again want to unpack what I am, the question that I'm asking. The University of Zululand was directed by the current Treasurer General of the African National Congress, Comrade William Keith, when he was MEC for Economic Development in KwaZulu-Natal. He negotiated the relationship between Kenya and the department, and then the relationship that he negotiated between the Department of Economic Development and Kenya, the government of Kenya, was to take people from Kenya, deploy them in the University of Zululand, to impart the knowledge for a period of 2 years, so that the University of Zululand would then be able to train people. The same applied with me. I was working for Welgespruit Fellowship Center in South Africa. And the Welgespruit Fellowship Center had a relationship with the Cody International Institute. So lecturers from the Cody International Institute came to South Africa to help Welgespruit Fellowship Center design courses for cooperatives, for cooperative developers, for change agents who were going to work in the sphere of cooperatives. We would then do the courses in South Africa. But when we have worked and demonstrated our passion and our understanding and our knowledge, we would then be taken to CODI. So I was trained by Welgespruit, but the training manuals that were used by Welgespruit were not designed by Welgespruit without a capacity. Welgespruit depended on CODI International Institute to develop and agree that their manuals were going to be used by Welgespruit Fellowship Center. And then, after that, Welgespruit Fellowship Center would take those people that it had trained and send them to CODI for further training. So the question then is, which institutions have imparted, has the department built relationships with, and what programs have been developed to capacitate the personnel in the department? And what exchange programs exist to bring in people from those institutions to South Africa and plug them either with the Coastal College or with other organizations that exist in the country who are working in this sphere, and take some to those countries for a particular period? Before you respond then, Honorable Mlawuz.
Thanks, Chairperson. Although I arrived a little bit late, but I read the presentation as forwarded by the Secretary. So I'm impressed, Mama Chairperson, by the development. I took this as a pilot project for it to be rolled out nationally. Mr. Honorable Kapa, everything will start somewhere. And Rome was not built in a day. So I understand you are jealous. Maybe you want it to be in your constituency. You are not a provincial public representative. You are a national member of parliament. So your interest must be for national. See? So I'm from Venda also. I like this project to start in Venda. Yes. Oh, okay. So this model, I think it's very much important. I was trying to say I'm very much impressed, but I think some of the questions we're asking the department here, which is the chief director, I don't think mostly which are administrative, I don't think it's a fair question to him to respond and give us a concrete, because he's not the head of department. We can empower him with questions and everything and he clear us, but if those who are leading him are not listening what we are saying, they can't take instruction from him. So it's the same, like we can empower the horse which is behind, but not empowering the donkeys, they will keep on walking slow, while the horse are very much energetic, but the donkeys will still walk their own way. So I think some of the question we know you can go and say it in the meetings, but we want when we call the meetings like this, when we talk about the cooperatives where there's a crisis of 88 failure rates, and we see only two officials coming here
we're not yet serious. Since 2014, we're still playing. So this model as a pilot project is the best model because it also includes triple P, public-private partnership. So it's very good, the work done by COA. Although most of the private, we so-called them, maybe they are capitalists for profit and everything. But if they are willing to come and assist our community and the government, we must use this opportunity. So I'm happy about the triple P, which is happening in KZN. So the other question I want you to maybe to draft a model or something. How are you going to link this with the agri-parks, which have been launched in the country, and I see our department there is nowhere to feature. The minister will be talking there, everybody will be talking there, will be for agriculture. But it was supposed that thing to be done through us, using the other departments in terms of the transversal agreements. But our department is just doing other things. The other departments are doing things for cooperatives, even like the agri-parks. But I don't know, you can tell us how are you going to merge that thing, because it's one government country, it's not a federal state. So we need to know about that. The other question which I wanted to make clarity, I think in your presentation, only Ilembe and Ugu are the ones who are always moving forward. The others is like they're dragging their legs. What strategy do you have to make it a point that those other districts, there are 11 districts in KZN, we can't have only two districts who are cooperating. We must know the reason of why these others are not doing that. And I think you must have some offices in the provincial levels which will monitor this district. The district will monitor the local municipalities. So that we mustn't focus into, because this pilot project is for the province. And in the province, there are 11 district municipalities. Only two are meeting the deadlines. So then it will also force this project to abort if we are not pushing the other nine districts. And I can see the role of CEDA here, but where is the role of CIFA? Yeah. Because it's CEDA, yes, we agree. We have CIFA. What is their role here? Because this year we need money to fast track this thing. So we must see them here assisting COA and everybody there, the agra, the specialists and whatever they want, because we wanted this thing to be the best pilot project in order when we roll it out to other provinces, we must have a benchmarking where we're benchmarking. So we don't want to find CIFA on the third province. We want to start with CIFA. It's our entity. They must tell us, even you must tell them some of the budget they can assist there. We mustn't focus on the budget we were given by that so-called Praveen. It's a useless budget. It can't do anything to this department. So we need another source of income, and we have CIFA. Before we go to other fund, empowerment fund and everything, CIFA must be there, because we were given by legislative that is under us. The budget we were given by the Treasury, it can't do anything. Radical economic transformation. It will keep on oppressing this 88 fatality. We want to know each and every year how much percent did we reduce in terms of cooperative fatalities. But this thing of small business, SME, is that thing is a capitalist ideology. One must be rich, the majority must be poor. So we as the department, we must be too much biased to cooperatives, because cooperatives helps the group of people, not the individual. So in fact, this department should have been called Department of the Cooperative Development, not the thing of small business. It's a waste of time. So you said on a business unit, I didn't see where the research fall in. Can you clear us there? Because we need researchers who will go and research even to other countries, and how did other countries try to win this war of empowering the cooperatives. So the last thing, I'm from EFF, I'm pro-radical economic transformation, you see, not the thing of play. You see, Chairperson, I think we need the department, the head of department and his DDGs to know what is happening and to hear our input. In the next meeting they must come, so that we must try to force this thing of cooperatives in the heads. Thank you, Chairperson.
Before the department responds, I think there are some of the questions that I need to respond to and give clarity. And the department was invited today to present, to give a briefing on the progress on the implementation plan on Abalimi intervention. So it is a follow-up to what was presented to us in December, where the department said, we have seen these shortcomings, we have seen these gaps, and this is how we are going to be responding to them to make these 12 cooperatives work. That is what the department was asked to do today. Then, I should think that because it is an interesting topic, it also relates very much to the economic conditions, socio-economic conditions of the country. Then members attempted to ask questions that are talking to the national strategy for cooperative development in South Africa. Some of the questions that have been asked by Honorable Chan relate to that. And some of the questions that are being asked by Honorable Mlauzi relate to that. The department also wanted to present that here. And I told them that we are not dealing with that now. We've asked you to come and brief us on the intervention. We will find time in our program and give you an opportunity to come and present us your national strategy for development of cooperatives. And I think that it is then that such questions will then be responded to. They can't be responded to today, because today we are dealing with the intervention related to Abali. And some of the questions also that I allowed the department to respond to, like the cooperatives, the question asked by Honorable Kappa on the how strong is the personnel in the DSP. I allowed that question on although we were not presented with the structures, because that personnel is already being deployed to implement this remedial plan of action to the 12 Abadi. And my question also about whether there is a relationship and the training background of those people. It is more to do with understanding whether we are asking a person who can't iron the dresses to iron the dresses and bend them. That's why I allowed that question, because we will be making another mistake if we were to deploy people that we have not trained to actually lead this process, because we will then be forever coming back to identify what has gone wrong.
Yeah, Chair, I think that is on the issue of the training and also the institutions that we've entered into relationship with around cooperatives. Chair, we have trained a number of the officials within the cooperative unit. We have trained a number of cooperative officials earlier. We've gone to ILO. We've given them the gold certificates from ILO, where they are trained on cooperatives development and how to do about it. We've done that. But most of the people that have been trained have been deployed to other activities beyond just the cooperatives. So what you are having now is, because of the changes that are taking place in the department, we are now having new people that are coming in on board. We need, therefore, to structure training for them and make sure that they get to understand the cooperatives and how it gets to be developed and all of that. They are skilled on areas of development in other areas like SMME, but they've never been playing into the space of cooperatives that are there with the changes that we've had. And then we do have also others who have never been trained specifically on cooperatives, where we need to establish rigorous relationship with various institutions so that we can train them specifically on how to develop cooperatives. The bulk of our officials are largely trained in development general and in development on SMME. But the unique character of developing cooperatives is not something that has a wider understanding in the department. There is something that we need to focus in building that particular capacity.
Oh, no, 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 no. Development in general is development. There's what is called community development. There's what is called the rural development. There's what is called social development. There's what is called development economics. A development economist and an economist are two different animals. When Minister Gwindi speaks, you can pick up that his training background is rural development and development economy. He doesn't speak the language that is spoken by former Minister Praveen. Because they come from two different backgrounds. So if you were to take Minister Gwindi and put him on this field, he understands it, because it is his training background. I understand the cooperatives because it's my training background. Okay. In the department, it's not possible that we can just speak of development in general. Development economies and community development is a different animal, and understanding the role of cooperatives in that space is a different ballgame. So the question is, even if there are trained people, who, if they are not placed in that space, the department will still make big, big mistakes because you are not matching the area of responsibility with the requisite skills. So I think that we have to suspend this question. Jeff is not the right person to respond to it. It is a question that has to be responded to by the DG.
Leave it at that.
Okay,
I'll leave it at that.
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
Honorable Chan?
I'm not sure that I could accept that. I mean, Jeffrey has been in charge of co-ops at the DTI and now the DSPD for 12 years. If he can't answer the question, the DG is certainly not going to be able to answer the question. I mean, what is stopping he's now a DDG, admittedly acting. He's a very senior manager in the department. Surely he should be able to recommend the formation at a minimum of a steering committee or some sort of entity that enables him to, you know, glean experience from other departments which are involved in cooperatives. Secondly, I think my question related to the medium-term expenditure is a perfectly fair question. I mean, these numbers aren't just going to be landed on his desk by some senior person. They have to be developed by the department, by the branch. Surely he must have some understanding of how much is going to be spent on these co-ops in the next 3 years. Otherwise, surely he's abrogating his responsibility.
I did not say Jeff should not respond to that. I said Jeff cannot respond to the issue of deploying personnel in different units because that is not Jeff who does that, it's the DG. And those personnel, it's the DG that can answer that question as to what informed her to put Jeff in a particular position, what informed her to put so-and-so in a particular position. What did she see? It's not Jeff. As much as Jeff is the senior, it's not him who deployed those people. It's the DG who deployed. That's what I was saying, that Jeff can't respond to that deployment of the personnel and the training background. It's not Jeff who can respond to that.
Chair, quite correct. I think that is the really bane of the matter. When it comes to the skills, I'm completely clear on that score. What are the skills that are required to develop the cooperatives? I can sit here the whole day and really elaborate on that. But I think that is on who gets deployed to where. These are issues that are taken at a different level. I'm not really, it's outside my pay grade to even engage on that. I think I would leave at that. And then I will go into...
I would like this part. Even a confusion. I think to some extent there is this feeling that Jeff, to some extent, he will be able to cover for if that's a correct term. For the shortcomings that are demonstrated in the department. That is why maybe Honorable South misunderstood me when I was saying I'm not impressed. He did not understand that I am a little more than being impressed. I'm excited. Because here, this potential and this indication that the existence and the creation of this unit and it being populated by this type of personnel in a potential. And therefore, maybe to some extent, we should complement this by saying, while he is not responsible for deploying, but he must take charge because he must also assist and identify, because of his identified relevant skills, therefore assist even this process. But we cannot only rely on the supervisor above. I think that maybe should complement and strengthen this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'm going to now deal with the issue of the that we raised. Maybe let me deal with the issue slightly. I don't want to sit on it. We had intended to give a strategy in South Africa. In fact, by the way, most of those documents that you read on the DTI and the analysis that you are picking up is the analysis that we made on the research we conducted in the Department of Trade and Industry. And we had identified very clearly what are the challenges that are facing the sector. And we've got a very detailed account of what are the things that needs to be sorted out for the cooperatives to be able to thrive in the economy. So in that regard, when the strategy comes, we can then go in detail what are the issues so that we can make the cooperative sustainable. One of the issues, Jay, if I could give you an example. Currently in South Africa, some of the cooperatives are operating like small business in the way in which they are conducting their business. What do I mean by that? They're not using the economics of cooperatives, which is the economies of scale and scope, to drive their businesses, which is the economics of numbers. Cooperatives are not, in fact, if they are being driven in that approach, they least really, when they are now rigorous, need government resources. You find that they are able to generate their own income and be able to drive the sustainability more than your normal businesses that are there. The history of the area of cooperatives is the one of more sustainability across a number of sectors when it's compared with SMME or other forms of businesses, which are the shareholder form businesses, which are using the shareholder model. So, but the way in which South African cooperatives are being introduced and the way they're being developed, these economic imperatives that should be built in the cooperative are not being emphasized by the experts, by the people who have to develop them and make sure that then they are being developed in that particular characteristics. Then in that way you are able to find that they'll be very largely sustainable and they will need less of government. And in fact, as we move forward, we'll find that there will be diminishing requirement of government resources. They'll be able to stand on their 2 feet. So I'm just saying that is all of those issues are in that report. We've dealt with them, and I'm very clear why I'm even arguing that the skills we need, the set of skills we need for officials to drive cooperatives development, must be different from the ones that we have on SMME. Because an SMME practitioner will bring SMME solutions to the cooperatives and then mess it up and make sure that it does not realize its objectives. So I just want you to leave it at that. But we're going
stop,
to...
Can you stop there, Jack?
Yes.
I just want to add on this issue that cooperatives survive on numbers. If we were to go to our report, most of the cooperatives that we have visited, particularly in Mpumalanga, had 5 members. That is the minimum number in terms of the act. But cooperatives survive because of absorbing big numbers. And there's just one structure in South Africa, and if we were serious about developing cooperatives, that we should be focusing on, it's the taxi industry. Taxi industry is a perfect model that we can build on if we wanted to demonstrate and establish real cooperatives in South Africa. Because even the manner in which they are structured, they are associations. And also they have this self-governance approach. They demarcate the areas that this is Westgate and Grange, this is the local association, this is the long distance association, and they have the laws that are governing that. And if in our approach we just adopted the taxi industry and said we were going to demonstrate in South Africa how to develop cooperatives and then work with the taxi industry, we would be far by now. Because they have their own money, they buy their own taxis, they don't go for a loan from government to buy their own taxis. Those taxis are running every day, they consume fuel. They have tires, they have insurance. That is the group that would have established its own bank in one day, cooperative bank to finance its cars. Because if you have 250,000 members of Santaco, and you then say each member on average has got 3 kumbis, and then you say 1 month only, each must put down 1,000 rand. You have established a cooperative bank, 1 month. So it's who is driving and what is the training background of that person who is driving that. That is the issue. Honorable Charles.
Thanks, Chair. You may have noticed or seen in the papers last week the JSE listed company Transaction Capital released its annual results. They have two major divisions. One is invoice discounting. The other one is taxi finance. Now, they have been lending hundreds of millions of rands to taxi owners. Not, in other words, it's not that the taxi owners funded themselves. They've been borrowing money from Transaction Capital, not forming their own bank. Why not? If they've been borrowing from an organization called Transaction Capital, why haven't they just got off and formed their own bank? I mean, we maybe
That question can be asked from the Cooperative Bank Development Agency, which has been focusing on regulating instead of developing cooperative banks.
But this is not a cooperative bank, commercial bank.
It is an agency that is charged with the responsibility of developing cooperative
banks. Talking about Transaction Capital, Chairperson.
The taxi industry is structured as an association. It's a group of people. We are talking about the numbers. The nature of a cooperative, how do you develop cooperatives? And the tax industry would have established its own cooperative bank because it would then be a cooperative bank supporting the cooperatives that belong to the tax industry, not a commercial bank.
I understand, Chair. I'm just saying that there's a gap in the market which a JSE-listed company has exploited. Maybe we should get the CEO of Transaction Capital to come and talk to us about what models he has adopted that could then be applied in a cooperative sense through a bank.
It's simple. Cooperatives in the past, they used to operate, when they were purchasing vehicles, they purchased it as individual owners. So what then they will do, because they were operating as individual owners, each individual owner will then go and source his own capital. All right. So let's say I've got a taxi, my taxi is running out, I now need to renew my capital, my fixed capital. I go to the bank, I said, give me a loan at the back of my income, because I've got a guaranteed income based on my taxi. I can demonstrate it and give it to the bank, and then the bank will then give me a loan to be able to acquire that vehicle. But now what the taxi industries are coming to realize is that they can be able to augment and create their own banks. That's why now currently under the cooperative association, they're now organizing themselves to create that cooperative bank. They are now starting those discussions. Why? Because they've realized that they can collectivize these monies and start loaning each other and buying their own fixed capital without necessarily going into that particular bank. So I'm saying that that is a work in progress. That eventually,
they've got their own cooperative finance institute.
Yes.
And then if they grow, they can then apply for a banking license.
Yes. So what I'm saying is that that work, they've now started to realize that there's a need for them to do that, because in fact when you look at the interest charges that they are paying there are high up there. So those are the issues that they are beginning to realize. I'm just saying that that is part of history. That's why indeed they used to go into that bank reality. I think if we could then maybe I will then answer. Indeed, we do see a chair that there will be a way of really building the capacity in our unit. It's something that I will be working on it, because as I'm now being given a room to be able to play in the space, I really intend to really build a very formidable unit that can be able to bring about the work that is required. And then as far back as 2013, we had called for institutions to be established, for cooperatives, so that they can have focus attention, focus expertise, focus knowledge, and focus attendance. These are issues that are not yet being unlocked. If we can unlock them, I can see that is, there will be a sea change in the space of cooperatives, definitely. Currently, the ones that we're creating in the Abalim, these are workers cooperatives. These are farmers who are producing, who are then creating their own cooperatives as workers and also as owners. But if we start putting services on top of them, and shared services and all kinds of services, logistics, what, then they will grow. Then they become very dynamic. Then, in fact, to the extent that they will end up starting to dominate these markets. But we are dealing with things that are still in nonsense stages, early stages of development. That's why they're having the vulnerabilities. But at the same time, also, they have not utilized the principles of cooperatives in the way in which we're implementing, we're moving them into that reality. That's why we're creating the secondary cooperatives, we're clustering them, we're making them to use the economies of scope, of sharing activities, of sharing services, so that the cooperative principles are in the way in which they're running their businesses. Chair, maybe if there are certain specific questions I've omitted, I think those I will then address them. CIFA is there, it's involved in some of the steering committee, not in all of them. Like for instance, in the metro, in Echequini, CIFA is there, is participating in that particular steering committee. But in the others, I think it is not there. And then also, CIFA provides loan funding. We are targeting them to do phase two for this particular Abalimi. But on the phase one, we're going to be using the CIS to then do that pilot effectively, and then when we're doing phase two with the cooperatives, we definitely want them to be doing it through the loan funding. Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank
you. Are there any other questions or comments? If none, let me take this opportunity to thank you for the report, but also to point out that the issue raised by Honorable Chan in terms of figures relate to the question that I asked as to when, how can you please indicate to us the figures and how many people and what are the incomes and where will be the break-even point and when will this cooperative become profitable, what will be the earnings, so that we can see the graph. Yes, we would appreciate that because it is an important aspect of your report which will then indicate to us that there is progress as opposed to just giving out money and then, yeah. Thank you very much. I then declare the meeting closed.